Well, it's great to be here. Well, great to be back. And I'm very happy also to present a work that somehow is an evolution of things that I was doing when I was here at PI. So the title is Purity Without Probability, but actually, to be kind of broader, the real title would be just Without Probability. So this is the kind of aim of this recent work that I was considering, that I've been doing. So this is the plan of the talk. So I will start from a simple question, and like all simple questions, they have a kind of difficult answer. So the question is like, what is information? What is this intuitive notion that we appeal so often to? And then I will move to general probabilistic theories. I think something almost probably everybody's very familiar with, but I will review a little bit on that topic. And I will start trying to do things without probability. So the starting point would be to give a definition of pure states of the familiar notion of pure state in physics, but without appealing to the notion of probability and of probabilistic mixture. After that, I will give a probability-free definition of fateful states. This may be less common. So fateful states are a particular type of mixed states that are very mixed. And so this term fateful comes from the language of von Neumann algebras. And finally, I will put together these definitions. I will ask for some properties, for some axioms, and I will make them work. So I will make this definition do what we want them to do. So like to prove theorems about the features of quantum theory without appealing to probabilities. And finally, if there is time, which means probably there is not going to be time, I will be trying to talk also about other cases where we have probability-free definitions of notions that typically refer to probabilities. So let me start from the kind of general introductive part, the general motivation of this talk. So the simple question is, what is information? And if you look back, at least on a zooming from a larger scale, there are two main ideas in information science. So one is the idea of information as an assignment of probability. And this has been really crucial to the development of Shannon theory of coding and of information compression. And to the notion of entropy, like Shannon and von Neumann entropy, like live in this particular world, in this kind of semantic field of things that have to do with probabilities. But of course, there is also another notion of information that has nothing to do with the particular knowledge that an agent may have. And this is the notion of information as an instruction, as an instruction to do something. So as an instruction to execute a process. So very famously, I would say this goes back to Turing's work on on the foundation of computation and of computability with the Turing machines. Much less famously, it also goes back to Shannon again. So I should have written Shannon versus Shannon here. So this early work, this was Shannon's master's thesis at MIT. So it was a thesis about on electrical engineering. So it was a work from my point of view at least, it was a pretty mundane problem on synthesis of electrical switches. So it was a very practical problem about the circuits. But this kind of motivated Shannon to have an abstract look at the circuit model. So this work, like Shannon's master thesis, is considered as the starting point of circuit complexity, of a notion of information, like how can we break down a process into elementary gates? So these are both crucial notions, and they are different. So it's important to recognize the difference between these two different ways of thinking of information. To make it a little bit more funny and more practical, so let's go to two important examples of these two paradigmatic examples. So I think you do you know what is this? So this was a TV game in the 70s in the US. It was called Let's Make a Deal. So where the presenter, Mr. Monty Hall, was asking the contestants. So there were three doors. And one door, behind one door, there was a prize, a car, if I remember correctly. And behind the other two doors, there were goats, I think. So the presenter were asking the people to guess where the car was. And if you had guessed right, you would have gotten the car. Well, otherwise, you wouldn't gotten anything, I think, not even the goat, probably. So the what we made the game interesting from the point of view of probability theory is that it worked in this way. So the contestant first choose one door, and after the contestant did choose the door, the Monty would have told her, he would pick one of the other two doors and say, okay, here there is a goat, okay? So there are three doors. You choose one door, and then the TV presenter tells you that in one of the other two doors there is a goat, and he tells you which one of the two has the goat. So then ask the contestant, do you want to change your mind or not? Okay. So I don't want to play the game here and ask you what you would do. I mean, if you don't know about the game, think about it. It's very nice because it really illustrates the difference between having some prior information and not having it. So it turns out that if you do the calculation, a rigorous, if you look at this without prejudice and you just do the calculation, it's always better to change. Whatever you have chosen at the beginning, after you know that one particular door had the goat, you always have to switch if you want to maximize the probability of guessing. So this really shows you how probability is important for an agent, because knowing things, so a subjective knowledge of the thing, can increase the likelihood of winning a prize. So there is an actual reward from that. So if you are skeptical, one easy way to think about this, to try to convince yourself, is that imagine that instead of three doors, there is 1 billion doors, and only one has the car. So after you choose, the presenter will tell you that 1 billion minus two doors have a goat, and then we'll ask you, do you want to change or not? So in that case, it's clear that you go from a probability 1/1 billion of guessing to 1/2 after the presenter excludes 1 billion minus two possible doors. So this is for the first notion. For the second notion, I'm sorry?
After you get that information, you don't update the probability of a half, you update two.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, absolutely. So sorry, I just kind of said something without thinking when I was doing that. But yes, yeah. So it becomes overwhelming. Sorry? I think so. I mean, I wouldn't guarantee actually on the actual thing, but it's pretty.
Here's the third, two-thirds. Yeah. Start out probability.
Yes. But whatever the value is, the point of this example is to tell that it does matter what subjective knowledge you have. I mean, nothing has physically changed behind the doors after the presenter said gave this information to the contestant, but there is an actual reward that is going to change if the contestant changes her choice. So an algorithmic notion of information is instead the one of DNA. So I think everybody would agree that DNA is information, this has not too much to do with the subjective knowledge of an agent. So here there are enzymes that read the sequence of nucleotides on the DNA. So this is it's a sort of mechanized process here, and still we would call the DNA information. Because so why do we do that? Because DNA is the set of instructions that are needed to build a living organism. So this is coming more or less from the second notion of information, the algorithmic notion of information. So this presents these two different approaches. So of course, quantum information had something to say in this debate, in this setting. So I think one of the important conceptual news from quantum information, among many others, is that there is not an obvious natural notion of information. So in a sense, quantum information did what non-Euclidean geometries have done for space-time. So we had originally an intuitive notion of what space-time should be, or what information should be. That was in one case, the flat space-time, and for information, it was the classical information. And then quantum theory came in this case and showed that actually things are different from what we naturally expected. So this raises some questions. So one question is can we construct a sort of abstract theory of information that captures the key features of classical and quantum information without committing to one particular theory. So somehow, if we think of information as kind of the software that is used to by physical processes, so the question is, can we find the rules of the software without having to specify what are the specific details of the hardware? So can we talk about properties of information without saying that the machines that process information are classical, quantum, or belonging to any other fancy theory that we can invent? So these, I think, were questions mostly raised by quantum information, essentially by the shock of seeing that information is not the way we expected it to be. So there is, this brings us to general probabilistic theories, which I think is a beautiful example of...
Yep. Just to be clear, are you saying both of those first notions of probability that you define, or information that you define, are...
affected by... Sorry?
You're not saying that both. Are you saying both of those notions are wrong?
Oh, I mean, at a vague level, they are right. I mean, these are just probability versus operations.
Okay.
But if we say that the probabilities obey the rules of classical probability theory, well, we know this is wrong, or I mean, we believe it is wrong. and also for the operations, just for the purely circuit part, we feel that from quantum complexity theory, we feel that there should be a difference between classical complexity and quantum complexity. There is not a real rigorous proof yet, actually, that quantum mechanics gives an advantage rigorously in terms of complexity theory, but everybody feels like that. There is a strong evidence it's not just a feeling. There is a strong evidence going in that direction. So in a sense, quantum theory affects both the algorithmic aspect and the probabilistic one. For the probabilistic one, I mean, Bell's theorem is probably the easiest way, the kind of clear-cut way to put it. Okay, so we go to general probabilistic theories, which I think is a beautiful example of how a mathematical framework can go beyond the original questions that motivated the introduction of this framework. So general probabilistic theories have been studied for the foundations of quantum mechanics, but I think this is something, it's like a piece of mathematics, like topology. It may have been introduced for studying some particular problem, but it has a life of its own, and it has an interest of its own. So the motivation for general probabilistic theories was from the very early days of assessing the foundation of quantum mechanics, like just to have an alternative approach to Hilbert spaces to be able to say something more physically motivated about quantum systems. So general probabilistic theories are a framework that is able to include all possible theories that we can reasonably imagine. And the approach of quantum foundations in the past years has been to try to isolate an interesting set of axioms that can reduce a general probabilistic theory to be actually quantum theory, to single out quantum theory. So this has a very long history. It started from Birkhoff and von Neumann in the 1936, which is incredibly early if you think about it. I mean, this was just 1 year after Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen. So it was really around the very beginning. So this was developed in the tradition of quantum logics by kind of giants like Mackey, Ludwig, and Piron, and many others, which for reasons of space cannot fit this slide. And essentially this has been renewed like now 13 years ago by the works of Lucien, Rob, John Barrett, Mauro D'Ariano, many people who are actually in this room also met, and Alex Wills, Barnum, and also ourselves. So this is kind of a modern way of looking to a very old question of how to define general theories. So this is a long history, and there are many flavors of how general probabilistic theories can work. But I think this is a very important achievement, the fact that we have a general framework to treat arbitrary possible physical theories. So we have a kind of general box where we can put classical and quantum mechanics together, and we can try to distinguish them at the purely abstract level, at the software level. So let me tell a little bit about one version of general probabilistic theories, that is the one that we have been involved in. So we means me, Mauro D'Ariano, and Paolo Perinotti. So when we defined the framework, we tried to distinguish as much as possible between the two ingredients that I mentioned to you before. So instead of calling our thing a general probabilistic theory, we just called them operational hyphen probabilistic, just to make clear that we are putting together two distinct ingredients. So in these theories, we have an operational structure that is about the kind of the algorithmic part, about what we can do in the lab. And we have a probabilistic structures that are kind of clearly separated. And so this was, I think, a first step towards trying to distinguish and to assess the relative merits of these two structures for quantum mechanics and in general for information theory. I will not review the whole framework, but just to give the feeling of what it is. So we have an operational structure. So this is what allows us to define circuits where we can, for instance, prepare a state of two systems, evolve one system alone, then do something else on two systems, and so on. And in the end, we can have measurements. So this is an abstract framework that generalizes what the framework of quantum information in particular is doing for us. So these are circuits that look exactly like quantum circuits, except that what we put inside are not quantum states and not quantum measurements, but kind of states and measurements in this general theory. And in my circuits, the input is on the left, the output is on the right. So mathematically, this thing, these circuits, are formalized by category theory. Technically, if you like the technical, to know the technical background, so this is called symmetric strict monoidal categories. And the recognition of the importance of this structure dates back to Abramsky and Cook 10 years ago. Cook developed this to what we now call process theories. And Seilinger made a strong contribution towards the foundation of this graphical language of circuits, starting from the axioms of category theory. So these things look easy, but they have a solid mathematical foundation. So much for the operational structure. For the probabilistic structure, we just impose that whenever we have a preparation of states, so we start from nothing, prepare system A, and then measure it, then this gives a joint probability distribution. So we just imposed this. So we added the probabilities on top of the algorithmic operational part. And by probability, I really mean in like Kolmogorov probability. So positive, non-negative real numbers with the normalization. So these are with normalization to one. No, they are just defined abstractly as a circuit. So like, I don't know, in the circuit model, in Boolean circuits, we have some, or like in probabilistic computation, we have every step of the computation has a possible set of processes that can take place. And we can have sequences of gates. So these don't have yet a probabilistic interpretation. They are just building blocks that are composed one after the other or in parallel. So there are no probabilities yet at this level. So let's say this would, the way Lucien puts that is like, these are like the instruction to build up an experiment. It's like. Yes.
Next one.
So these are probabilities. So these things are real numbers that are associated to circuits. So there is a circuit of devices that we are, let's say, using in a lab, and each device has a set of possible outcomes. So every instance of experiments using these devices will have a sequence of outcomes. So this rule tells us what is the probability of these outcomes. So it's like what we want to do in physics. We want to describe the experiment and to assign a probabilistic prediction to the outcomes. But these are like and. So these are two different ingredients that are put together.
The output can also be the input and the input.
You mean the symmetric monoidal categories?
Yeah.
No,
it's because the input can be the output.
No. It's a very.
What does that mean?
It just means that when we draw a circuit, we can cross the wires. And I mean, it's obviously in the graphical sense, but mathematically, is one more axiom at the categorical level. I mean,
kind of permutation
Yeah, I mean, it literally means that if you have a state of Alice and Bob, let's say you have a state rho of A and B, it doesn't really matter if on the blackboard, so this is isomorphic to what we would have if we just write this here and this here. I mean, it means that graphically it doesn't matter where I draw lines on the planes, that only the topology matters. Yeah, actually, only the topology matters is a very important thing here, because essentially symmetric monoidal categories, in a sense, date back to Penrose notation for tensors, and eventually to a work by Joyal and Street about exactly the correspondence between topology on the plane and category theory. So that's exactly what it is. Okay, so probabilistic structure. So one thing that we can do after we have probabilities, and we did that, is to say that two processes are equivalent if they give the same probabilities for every possible circuit. Okay, so these are two possible processes that we can have in a circuit, Ci and Dj. So here we are saying that they are equivalent if whatever state we prepare and whatever measurements we make after the process, we get the same probability. So this means that whenever we close these two processes within a circuit, we will get the same. So we consider this to be statistically equivalent. This also has a long tradition starting from Ludwig, I think, and Holevo as well. So we did, after we take the quotient, we get a nice mathematical structure that is the structure of operational probabilistic theories. So we prove the theorem that after we do the quotient, we get a theory where the processes from input A to output A prime generate a real vector space. So we have a nice vector space structure, and when we compose processes in a sequence, the composition is bilinear, so it's linear in both elements. So this tells essentially that at least in some sense, we can represent our processes as matrices in a very kind of convenient mathematical way. So this comes from putting together the two ingredients and taking the quotient. So, I'm sorry? Yes. Because so the core of the thing is that probabilities are real numbers, and real numbers have a notion of sum. So this sum propagates to all the circuit. In a sense, it starts from the probabilities and it kind of infects all the rest of the circuit. So after we have linearity, we can take the sum of two states. So this gives enough mathematical structure to define convex sets, if we want to do so. So in quantum foundation, people have considered a lot convex probability theories, where we have a state space that is a convex set. So essentially, on this very foundational level, the possibility of defining a convex state space is guaranteed by the interaction between operations and probabilities. Okay, so this was a review of the past. Well, and let me give a little bit more. So in this framework, we can define pure states, of course. And pure states are kind of an important notion both in physics and computer science, because they describe the maximal knowledge that we can have about a physical system or about a piece of data. So the mathematical definition is the easy one. So we say that the process is mixed if we can be obtained by coarse graining two different processes together. So like if we have a dice and we toss it, we could say that the process of getting an even number is a coarse grained process, because we obtain by putting it together the processes where we obtain the number 2, the number 4, and the number 6. So when we have the sum, we have a mixed process. And by negation, we have a pure process whenever, if we write a process as a sum, the two terms in the sum must be actually proportional to the original one. So this tells us that whenever we think that we break A into A1 and A2, actually what we are doing is just to toss a coin and have A with probability P or A with probability 1 minus P. So we always have A, and we just toss a coin independently of that. So this is a pure process. So it means that if you know that what happens in the lab is described by process A, essentially you know as much as you could possibly know about the device that you are using. So yes, pure processes describe a maximal knowledge about what is happening in the lab. So they play a very, very crucial role in most of the recent quantum reconstructions. Starting from Lucien's work in 2001, so one of the axioms was that every two pure states are connected by a path of reversible transformations. So there is a privileged role of pure states here. I mean, so it's not every state can be connected in this way, only the pure ones. So this axiom was then inherited by Dakic and Bruckner and Massanes and Müller, who essentially reprocessed some of the axioms here and combined with other axioms, getting a new derivation. But they kept this axiom among their set of axioms. So this also in these two axiomatizations, the role of pure states is still prominent. So in our work, it was even more prominent because we had a purification axiom that says that whenever we have a system in a mixed state, we can always think of this as a part of a larger system in a pure state. So this was the purification axiom. And we had another axiom that says that whenever we have two pure processes and we combine them, we still get a pure process. So this is called the purity preservation. So two of our axioms were explicitly about pure processes. And also most recently in the latest, latest axiomatization by Lucien, there is also one axiom that is privilegedly about the pure state. So for every pure state, you can find a measurement that identifies that pure state. So pure states are surely important in the works in foundations. If you don't care about axiomatizing quantum theory, only if you just care about quantum information. So we had this work where we actually axiomatized some features of quantum protocols using purification, using the idea that every mixed state comes from a pure state of a larger system. So essentially there is this long list of things that just follow from purification, like entanglement, no cloning, teleportation, steering, many other things. I will not read all the items in the list, but that's a pretty long list. So very nice, this is where we are. Very nice, but do we really need to talk about pure states in the sense of probability theory, in the sense that I showed before? So do we really need a probabilistic structure? And the answer was provided by Schumacher and Westmoreland. The answer is no. So they wrote down explicitly a theory where there is no probability at all. There are only possibilities. And in this theory, you can reproduce many of the features of quantum theory as well. So it means that at least one part of quantum theory has nothing to do with probabilities as in the usual sense, that probabilities as real numbers between 0 and 1. Another question is like, what is so special about pure states and pure processes that they appear so often in the recent axiomatizations? So these are questions from the point of view of the field of quantum foundations, but actually the problem I think is broader here. So this is not only about quantum foundations. So the foundation of the notion of pure state or pure process has to do with the pretty fundamental questions about like, what is a maximal knowledge? Like what is the right definition of maximal knowledge and how can we acquire a kind of a whole piece of information? So some integral piece of information. So I think this is probably, I think for me, these are the deepest questions that have to do with this research project, like trying to understand more what is the foundation of how we gain information and what do we mean by having information. So what I will try to do now, I will try to present some results about defining pure states without probabilities and without convex sets. So I call this deconvexification. I'm mimicking a technical term in computer science as the de-randomization process. So this is it was a trend in the past 10 years, I think, in computer science of taking algorithms that use randomness and de-randomizing it. So showing that one can get the same results without tossing coins. If you haven't heard about that, a beautiful example is the example of finding if a number is prime or not. So there was a pretty simple probabilistic algorithm, and people thought that this was an example of an algorithm that had a speed up using randomness and that could not be achieved by using a kind of deterministic computer. But pretty recently, that was shown to be false. So there is actually an efficient deterministic algorithm for establishing whether or not a number is prime, and this was a pretty much of a breakthrough in computer science like now, well, I don't remember how many, but now a few years ago now. So let me go now to this probability-free framework. Sorry?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not aware of any computers which use random processes. I mean, apart from D-Wave.
Yes. So I think the question was originated at least theoretical. So we start with the axioms of probability theory. We imagine that we have a coin that is reliably a coin that really. So then, how to implement this in the real world is actually an issue. I mean, we try to have stochastic simulations like Monte Carlo or Metropolis, but they are not real.
But it would suggest you should design computers with.
If there were a gap, you mean?
Yes. More efficient to use truly random numbers.
Yes, sure.
Once you do so.
Sure.
But nobody bothered.
Sure. probably it's a technical problem. It's a kind of how can we just certify that we have a computer using randomness? I mean, people are doing this now, but with quantum mechanics, not with classical randomness. So what is the framework that we are using now? So we want to throw away our previous work on operational probabilistic theories and keep only the operational part, at least for a while, at least for this talk and for the papers that are related to it. So the framework that I found convenient to use was the one by Koeke and Lal in 2010. So again, it's a framework of circuits. You don't need to know the mathematical details. So this is what we have is a category of processes. So essentially, we have a model of circuits that we can write down. And the technical there are two technical requirements. One is that the monoidal unit is terminal. So this, out of the technical language, this means that we can always take a partial trace of a state. So if we have a state of two systems, we have a canonical way of throwing one system away. Okay? So this is what this thing means, and is related to causality. And the other technical assumption is that using the possible states, we can distinguish between different processes. So if process C is different from process D, if it is different from process D, they should do something different on at least one input, or counterpositively, if they do the same on every possible input, then they are the same process. Okay? So we ask this because it's not obvious. And that's it. So that's the framework. It's just a framework of circuits where we can have a partial trace. So now we can define the context for a piece of information. So we can think of a state of a physical system as a piece of information that we have, like as a way of objectifying. Yes?
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
When you say state separable, for instance, is that
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So what do you mean by saying that they're different
other than? So I axiomatically mean that they are different. So this is not an operational notion that comes from checking probabilities. So I am assuming here that there is a kind of a primitive notion of two states being the same or not, of two pieces of information being the same or not. So I'm not committing philosophically to anything that could relate to this idea. This could be just a way to ignore the operational part of an operational probabilistic theory. So we could say that this notion of equality between states comes because we think of these processes into a larger theory where we can have measurements and we can check the statistics. But we may not need to do that. We could even think a kind of realistic theory where a priori we have a notion of two states being equal or distinct that has nothing to do with the actual operational level. Yes?
So what you're saying is that you have a notion of equivalence of states, but it may not be the statistical equivalence you defined earlier. It could be, for example, possibilistic equivalence in the Schumacher-Westmoreland.
Yes, totally. So.
There's some notion of state equivalence that
yes.
you have.
And essentially here we don't bother specifying where it comes from. Yeah. Very good. So when you have a state, so a state is a piece of information in a kind of axiomatic sense. So what is the context in which you can have this piece of information? So physically, this is just a question about finding an extension of a state. So we can have a state sigma of A and B together, And this state could have a rho as a, the marginal on system A. So in this case, sigma is an extension of rho. And using a little bit of computer science terminology, I would say that sigma is an extension of rho to a context where we have system B in the circuit. So essentially, you can think rho describes what I know about a part of the universe, about a physical system. And the question is, in which context this information can fit? So how can we complement this with the rest? So now we are ready to give a probability-free definition of pure state. We can say that a state is pure if and only if there is no way to extend it. So that is kind of an isolated piece of information that is concentrated on a one particular physical system. So we say that alpha is pure if whenever we extend alpha to a state of A and B, the extension has to be a product. So it means that by definition, just the fact that we know about system A, that the information that we know is given by the state alpha, this guarantees that that the system A is disconnected from the rest of the universe, and all the experiments that we may want to do on system A or all the processes will run in a disconnected way from all the rest. Okay, so this is one of the things I like here, because this is kind of a purely operational in the sense of the operations. It's purely a kind of algorithmic notion of purity, in the sense that it tells us something that is intrinsically a property only of the diagrams. It has nothing to do with the probability, the notion of probability. So there are nice properties that you can that follow from this definition. So one property is that pure states from a monoid, so the product of two pure states is pure. And this is nice because generally in the framework of probabilistic theories, this doesn't follow from the definition. So which means that the notion I'm giving to you coincides with the usual notion in standard conditions, but is slightly different if we consider weird probabilistic theories that have some strange properties. So here we get for free the fact that the product of two pure states is a pure state. Yep.
Give me
a theory with, I can give you offline. I don't have an example just ready now. But the point is that when we don't have local tomography, this property can fail. So it's easy to cook up examples where this property fails. And for me, it's very hard to remember these examples because they are totally uninteresting, except for the fact that they are counterexample to this. So just to remember that there are, but it's hard to remember them. But it's easy to cook them up, so we can do it. So, but the point is, unless we have local tomography or something similar to local tomography, so this thing is going to fail. So this may not be true in a general probabilistic theory, but it's true in many theory without local tomography, like real quantum mechanics. So it's kind of capturing an idea that is kind of a little bit tricky in the usual framework. So another thing that is immediate is that whenever we have a reversible transformation, so technically an isomorphism in the category, when we have this, a reversible transformation sends pure states into pure states. So again, this has nothing to do with probabilities. It's just a corollary of the definition here, of the definition of pure state and of the definition of reversible transformation. Or reversible transformation?
Reversible transformation.
Yeah. So there is an inverse on the left and on the right. So I think it's the usual one, I would say. So this was, so U minus one equal to the identity on system B, if it goes from A to B, and U minus one, U equal to an
identity. Sorry, can you use another choke because it's,
Sorry?
That choke is terrible.
Choke,
or
do you use that blackboard? Maybe I think it's the light. So, different blackboard there and same choke, or different choke? Okay, so if you have a reversible gate that goes from A to B, so I call it reversible, I mean that, well, that we can invert, so U minus, so that there is a U minus one, so that U minus one after U gives the identity on A, and the U after U minus one gives the identity on B. So this is the definition of reversible, I think also in kind of ordinary circuits. I tend to distinguish this from invertible, because invertible would mean it's possible to go back. So there is an inverse on the left, on the left, but may not be on the right. So reversible means really like a unitary matrix in quantum mechanics. U dagger U is equal to the identity, U dagger is equal to the identity. So that's that's the abstract definition here. So whenever you apply a reversible gate to a pure state, the state remains pure by fiat, by definition. Okay, so we can define also a category of processes that preserve pure states. So we can say that a process is purity preserving if it leaves any pure state pure. And it's very easy to prove that with this definition, pure processes form a category, so that we can compose pure processes in a sequence, sorry, purity preserving processes in a sequence and in parallel. So they form a monoidal category. This is very easy because typically the sets of operations that preserve some set of states form a category usually. So that's pretty almost trivial. And now we are ready to define purification without probabilities. So to define the axiom of purification. So we have a notion of pure state and we have a notion of a reversible gate. So purification, so I call this categorical purification because there is no probability at all here. So we can say that for every state of every system, so for every state rho, there is some state, some pure state of system AB, so that rho is the marginal of psi on system A. So this is the usual definition, stripped out from the fact that this thing lives in a probabilistic theory. And this is a purely kind of graphical notion or circuital notion of purification. And we ask that every two purifications of the same state are equivalent up to reversible transformations. So I say up to isomorphisms in the context. So this means that here we have the two purification with the possibly different contexts. So there is always a way to transfer one purification into another just by combining pure states and reversible gates. So for the experts, this is slightly different from the requirement that we had in the original purification paper, because we had the same system being in the original paper. The reason why I'm doing this here is that with this little change, we can include infinite dimensional separable Hilbert spaces. So we can include infinite dimensional systems by just tweaking a little bit with this property of purification. So that's the axiom, more or less is the usual axiom. And we know that purification gave a lot of features of quantum mechanics. So can this categorical purification give all these features? So can we get entanglement or no cloning out of it? What do you think about? I mean, this is a little bit of a tricky question. So feel free to say what you would say. So So the reason why I asked it is that because the natural answer is yes. Because we typically think already in a probabilistic setting, so where we are purifying a mixed state. But strictly speaking, the slippery part here was that I haven't defined the mixed states yet. So our theory may not have mixed states at all. So strictly speaking, we have to wait a little because we don't know even if we have mixed states. So our theory for the moment could be just classical deterministic computation where all states are a product, so there is no entanglement at all, like in a classical deterministic computer. So for the moment, I didn't even ask that there are mixed states in this theory. Right? So of course, like Matt said, our intuition brings towards that. So we want to have a notion of mixed states, and that's the next step here. So we want to define mixed states. And this looks harder because we don't have probabilities, right? So how do you define the mixture of rho and sigma if you have no idea of what it means to mix rho and sigma together?
So why do you need to mix states? I don't think there's no cloning here. I mean, if you talk about no cloning, not a problem of pure states.
Oh, yeah.
Why do I need mixed states?
No, you don't need that. I'm saying that to get many of the features that we were getting before,
yeah,
we use the properties of mixed states. It is not needed actually directly for no cloning. There is a connection, but not a direct one. So yeah, logically, it was just a clash of sentences that I put there. Yeah?
Okay, so to find the mixed states, you have to know the cloning.
final appear status.
Mm-hmm.
So logically, can't we just say, you know, state is mixed if it's not a pure state?
And I'm going to do that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But we need a little bit more than that. So yeah. Yeah. Yes. So so the usual definition, of course, is that we can say, for instance, that rho is more mixed than sigma if we can obtain rho by mixing sigma with something else. Right. I don't know if there is a better wording for this relation. I'm just writing informally more mixed. So in the when we have probability, we can mix things together. However, this expression is not a legal expression for in our language because we don't have probability. So we cannot do this. So we are full of mixed states in our usual probabilistic theories, but here we don't have probabilities to make them. So it's kind of a frustrating situation. How can we solve that? So there is a nice observation. One nice observation is that in the convex, in the usual convex set framework, if a state is more mixed than another, so if a state is obtained from the other by mixing, then for every extension of one state of the second, there is one extension of the first that is more mixed than the other. So if rho is more mixed than sigma, if you take an extension of sigma, you can find an extension of rho that is more mixed than the extension of sigma. I mean, this is, I don't know how intuitive, sorry?
That it was pure, so I'm not.
No. Extension means just extension. Okay. So
you use the notation side as just an example. You could also have a mixed state there, and that would also be considered an extension.
Yeah. Probably I compressed too many things. So recently you have just seen psi because I was talking about purification. But in the definition of extension, I used the letter sigma, I think, just to contemplate the possibility that this may be mixed. So we can always find an extension of a state that is more mixed than the extension of the other if the original states were in this relation to each other. So this is nice because this can be leveraged at the categorical level to give the definition I wanted to give. So in the categorical sense, we can say that rho is more mixed, or here I use the more professional term sufficient. So rho is sufficient for sigma if whenever we check the equality of two processes on the extensions of rho, we automatically have the equality of the processes on the extensions of sigma. So in the convex set framework, this follows from the property that I showed you in the previous slide. Here we just choose this feature as a definition of what means for a state to be more mixed than another, so to be sufficient. This maybe is a new thing, so I don't know if it's clear to everybody. Is it any question about this? Because this is one, probably the less familiar thing that I have been introducing in what I've said until now. Is this clear?
It's not intuitive yet.
So I'm saying that essentially that the rho is more mixed than sigma is if checking the quality of two processes on the extensions of rho is more powerful than checking the quality on the extensions of sigma. And in the usual framework, it follows from the definitions. Now I'm just promoting this to the definition. So we say that the state is faithful if it is sufficient for every other state, if it is more mixed than any other state. So in the usual framework, this means that you have a convex set of states, and the faithful state is inside the bulk of the convex set. It's not on the surface, on the face of the convex set. The word faithful comes from sister algebras because this notion of being in the bulk doesn't really work in infinite dimensions. So in that area, we talk about faithful states. So our definition generalizes the one in the sister algebra framework. So in other words, whenever two processes are equal on all the extensions of a faithful state, then they are equal at all. So I realized that I'm actually not doing too well with time. So if you agree, I will just try to get to one of the main results that have to do with this definition and just close there because I had several things, but probably we just better just focus on one result. So after we have these notions, we can start to formulate axioms. So we had the purification already. So now I put an axiom that imposes that there are mixed states in our theory. So the axiom is to say that for every system, for every possible system, the set of states contains at least one faithful state. So there is at least one state that in the convex set framework would be inside the bulk, inside the convex set. So this is true for every familiar operational probabilistic theories. So it's true in quantum theory on complex and reals. It is true in classical probability theory. But it's also true in the theory by Schumacher and Westmoreland. So in that theory, you don't have probabilities, but you do have fateful states in the sense that I just introduced. So the good thing that you can do if you have purification and fateful states is that you can define the analog of the Choi-Yamolkowski isomorphism in quantum mechanics. So we just take the fateful state and purify it. From this, we can get a pure state that is able to detect whether or not two processes are the same. So if process C is equal to process D on this particular state, then the two processes are the same. So this follows from the faithfulness requirement and from purification. I mean, without any probability, we can prove this as a theorem. And as you know, this is an important structure. One thing that you can do with it is to prove that every reversible process can be obtained by using only pure states and reversible processes and discarding stuff. Again, this is so this was well known in the algebraic area. It was the Steinspring theorem. And this can be kind of reconstructed without any sister algebra, without any probability, but only in purely in terms of composing processes, of rules about the composition of processes. And this is the main result. So the main result may look not too impressive if you just read it, but it has a lot of consequences and it kind of encompasses many results in quantum information. So the result tells you that whenever a process preserves pure states, if it is purity preserving, then the process is pure itself. So it means it is disconnected with anything else in the world. So it's a little bit abstract. So a process is pure here. I mean that whenever we extend the process, if we extend the process, all the possible extensions are of the trivial product form. So there is no way, if this process is pure, there is no way to extend it other than putting it together with some state of a disconnected region. So this theorem essentially tells us that whatever preserves the set of pure states has to be disconnected as a process from what happens in the rest of the universe, essentially. And this is the key essentially to no cloning and to the no information without disturbance property of cryptography or of quantum information. Because imagine here that you have a process that transforms A into itself and doesn't disturb it, so it is like equal to the identity on system A. So this process is going to be disconnected from the rest, so it cannot transfer any information to B. Right? So this is no information without disturbance, and no cloning is a particular case of this. Okay? Because in cloning, we would like to produce two copies, so A and B should be the same system, but just the requirement that we have a copy on system A gives us that we have a fixed state on system B. So we cannot clone because of this, now because of this purity theorem in this framework. And the other consequence you get is error correction. So whenever you can correct a physical process, however you extend that process, then you should have that no information goes into the environment. And that's it. I think this is probably the main result that we obtained so far. So from these definitions, we can reproduce a structure that is at the basis of error correction and many other features in quantum information, like no cloning. So to wrap up, let me tell what this gives to the program of axiomatizations. So first of all, to some extent, we lifted the restriction to finite dimensional systems, because everything I said here holds also for infinite dimensional quantum mechanical systems like the ones that people consider in quantum optics. Not field theory maybe, but quantum optics at least. So some infinite dimensional systems fit. So as you might have noticed, I never mentioned local tomography. So we never really needed it. So everything I said here was true independently of local tomography. It was just following from two axioms and a few definitions. And also, relative to the axioms in our reconstruction of quantum theory, we removed one, essentially, because we don't need to require that the composition of pure processes is a pure process. So this is now is a theorem, if we accepted the definitions that I gave here. And we can reproduce again most of the features that we had before in general probabilistic theories. So with all the with the axioms I showed you until now, we get entanglement, no cloning. We can get process tomography, reversible simulations, no bit commitment. So many of the results that were on the table before are still here. There are a few of them that are not here now for the moment, but this is mostly for a technical reason. So you can see the results that are missing here are the ones that have to do with the measurements, because we just don't have measurements here. So provided that we introduce a reasonable notion of measurements in this framework, which we can do, I mean, we know more or less how to do, we can also cover these things. But for what I said literally here in this talk until now, this is what we have. So we have, we have the yes instances of this. And I think I'd like to conclude here. So this is more or less the main result in this project that I'm kind of to push forward now. So thank you very much for your attention.
So this is fantastic. So I wondered if for a while it's possible to have a much more structural understanding of axiomatization of quantum theory and things like this is pointing in that direction.
This is one of the hopes.
Yeah,
I didn't mention this as a motivation, but it is for me. It's like simplifying the things that we have been doing. So like maybe just redefining things in a slightly different way makes some derivations easier, shorter, more insightful. This is my hope. So
now the question is, so although you don't need tomographic locality, is it possible to characterize tomographic locality within this framework?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are a few possibilities. So I haven't played with that yet. So this framework, I guess you mean without putting measurements. Yeah. If we put measurements, we can have a graphical definition.
Okay.
So this is, I mean, graphical definition is, you know what I mean. You have that So I don't need to talk about that. If we don't put measurements, I think local tomography would be the property that if two states of two or more systems are the same, so rho prime, are the same, whichever local processes we apply on them, so whenever we put here process A from A to A prime and process B, and B to B prime. So if this is true for every possible A and B, then the states are the same. So this implies rho equal to rho prime. So I think this is the natural way of translating local tomography in this measurement-free framework.
Okay.
I haven't played much with this, so I don't know how much it buys. But I think it would buy most of the things that it does in the normal scenario.
Okay. Why isn't that just automatically true when you put identities in A and B?
I'm sorry?
Like if I just put identity transformations on A and B, then that first line is just the mean.
Well, that's right. So, sorry. So for every A and B that are measurements, yes, that's a very good point. So what I mean, so A and B have, I mean, to make it non-trivial, we have to require A and B to be measurements, and we have to define what a measurement is without appealing to probabilities. But this is something that has been done already, actually, in Bob's group. They have been, so we can define a measurement as something that copies data. Okay? So we can define these things to be measurements if there is one way, if they can be extended. Well, actually, let me write the definition here because this is something that I haven't thought about before now. One can define this. I mean, one has to use the thing that Bob has been doing with his group on defining measurements and classical information in theories without probabilities in the categorical framework. And if you adapt that definition that he has, here you can state this. Yeah. So, the adaptation is not exactly immediate, so that's why I didn't want to write it here, because it requires a little bit, again, it's like the counterexample that Rob was asking for. It's easy to do, but it requires a little bit of thinking that I wouldn't like to do here online, but we can do it like after offline. Yes?
So thanks, first of all, that's really clear. I'm wondering, so extensions of measurements.
Mm-hmm.
In quantum information, we often use the ancilla-based extension, but there's also an extension in terms of direct sums of Hilbert spaces. So if I have a three-outcome POVM, I can always represent that as a projective measurement. Say three-outcome POVM on a two-dimensional Hilbert space.
Mm-hmm.
I can find a projective measurement on, say, a three-dimensional Hilbert space, which is an extension of that POVM. And that three-dimensional Hilbert space, although I can embed it in, say, 2x2, I don't have to think of it that way.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just really curious, is there any, do you see any way of kind of capturing structurally these sort of notions of extensions that involve direct sum structures rather than tensor products?
Well, I do see it. I didn't have done too much of a contribution of myself on this. For this, I would look mostly at Bob's work and the work that they have been doing. So I've just started to think about this thing of measurements because of this table, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not thinking yet of local tomography, but what we are talking about there is what I would put here now, in order to get the other results in the table. But if I so I haven't done much of this, but if I can say like my opinion, that is that this is what should be done. So like thinking. Of direct sums systems is a good direction, essentially because it means that we embed the classical information inside the type of information that we have in this physical theory. And we want that, no? Because classical information is part of the things that we see in our in the universe around ourselves. So we want a theory that can describe this on an equal footing with all the rest. So I think direct sum is actually something we want to do, but it's not yet there, actually.
You were talking about a characterization of one state being more mixed than another.
Yes.
Without using convex structure.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to, that relation of more mixedness will give you a pre-order over your states.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, you know, if I did have probability distributions, then I could tell you, you know, the pre-order is the one defined by majorization theory.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if I was doing a possibilistic case where I just talked about coarse gradients, I could tell you exactly what the pre-order is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, could you say this sort of generic notion of the more mixed relation, could you characterize it in terms of what are the properties of the preorder that would characterize a more mixed relation? So the thing that's common to majorization and possibilistic majorization, every other
at this notion. Level is just the fact of being a preorder and of having having maximal elements. So what we call a fateful state, it means like a state that is more mixed than anything else. So when you have a preorder, it's not obvious that you may have an element that has this property. So sometimes you may not have an element that is larger than everything else. Here we are asking this as an axiom. So this is a common feature of both the majorization relation and the relation of kind of coarse graining in the possibilistic sense.
It feels like there should be more properties of
yeah.
preorder besides that that are implied by your definition.
Yes, but, well, sure. I mean, if one pushes it more, if one pushes this further, there are properties under product, under tensor
right.
product, like the tensor product of something that is more mixed than something else,
yeah.
With the fixed state is going to be more mixed than the other, or this type of thing.
So it's preordered monoid, and you have to characterize those.
Yes. I think these things may be probably following from the definition. So the only thing that is really non-trivial at the moment is the fact that we have a state that is more mixed than any other state. And it's nice because this is true also in infinite dimensions. So in infinite dimensions, like a thermal state of the harmonic oscillator is a state that is fateful. But actually, I believe actually this state is not in the interior of the convex set, because essentially in infinite dimension, I mean, the interior is like empty. There is no interior if one really checks. It's a pretty weird thing, but in infinite dimension, this kind of geometric picture of the convex set doesn't really work so well. So this notion of fateful state is kind of extending the notion of state inside the bulk also to the infinite dimensional scenario.
How do you get entanglement?
I'm sorry?
How do you get entanglement?
Very good point. So how do we get, first of all, how do we define entanglement? So what I would define here is entanglement for pure states. So it's easy to define when a pure state is entangled. And the definition is the obvious graphical one. Now we have a state of two systems, A and B. It is either it is a product, it's like alpha tensor beta, or if it is not a product, it is entanglement. So this is the definition. So now, accepting this definition, and accepting the definition of mixed state that Matt was mentioning before, so we define a mixed state like something that is not pure, with our definition, then the purification of a mixed state is, by definition, an entangled state. So whenever you purify a state that is not that was not already pure, you will get an entangled state. So this is a very quantum-like feature. It's not true in the classical in classical probability theory, so we cannot, and this gives entanglement, the purification of mixed states. Kind of, to make it a little bit less technical, on the kind of more broad way, so this means, purification means that whenever we don't have an integral piece of information about one system, we can extend our description and have a pure state for the whole, for a composite system together. So this property is not classical. So we do need this. But we have this in quantum mechanics, and we do need it here to get the result again.
Why is it not classical?
Because for a classical probability distribution, actually, so let me put it in this way. Classically, if we have two systems together, the only pure states of two systems together are products of two pure states of the individual systems. Right? So if we have two harmonic oscillators, I would give you position and momentum for both. And these are the only pure states of two systems. So if you discard one system, you end up with the other in a pure state. No way to get a mixed state out of that. But in quantum mechanics and in this abstract framework, we do have that. Yes?
So within this structural framework, do you make this the quantum case more natural in this context? So that you get entanglement, whereas, of course, you don't in the classical case. Are you making this more natural?
I guess your question is a little bit open to how I would interpret natural, so let me take the liberty of interpreting. So in a sense, I would answer, yes and no. So I think, but it is making things more natural in this sense. I think this framework is pretty basic, and I would try to keep it, so I'm happy with what we got here. This framework allows us to consider theories that are not that are completely deterministic, like where there are only product states and no mixed states at all. So what I'm doing now, just a question of writing papers, it would be to prove that if we assume this framework and we have some kind of natural axioms, some reasonable axioms, like in the axiomatization, we can get as possible models only classical deterministic computation, quantum mechanics on quantum theory on complex Hilbert spaces, and quantum theory on real Hilbert spaces. So they would come out as the reasonable theories in this kind of abstract structural point of view.
Rolling out the classical probabilistic.
Yes. So essentially, in a sense, I find it's pretty new, and I kind of like to look at things in this way. Classical probability theory would be more like accidental in this. So classical computation would be very fundamentally in this framework. Quantum computation on real and complex Hilbert spaces would be fundamental, but like classical probability theory would not appear, would not pop out of these axioms. And the axioms are essentially the old axioms, are the ones of our paper, just exported to a different framework, to a different way of looking at things. So, because classical theory, classical computation satisfies purification if we don't have mixed states. No? Every state is the marginal of a pure state if we only have pure states. So the only thing that is non-trivial of purification in classical computation is the fact that we can transform every pure state in another pure state by irreversible gates, which is true in classical computation. Yep.
So I'm just wondering if this framework has a slightly broader applicability than the one we talked about here. So,
yeah. Yes.
So if you were sort of talking about physical processes, like in the quantum case, in the polygon maps.
Yes.
But if I'm trying to write down a theory of inference, so like Matt and I,
yes,
down,
yeah,
theory,
yeah.
Then we don't have just completely positive maps. We have these other maps, for example, the map that tells you how, you know, when you've got a certain effect measured here, how you should update your states over there, which is called Steering maps.
Yes.
And those maps include partial transpose, for example, and CP maps
include partial transpose. Yeah.
So do all your results go through? Like, is it the case that for such maps, if they're purity preserving, they're also pure?
Well, the only thing is that we use purification, right? So that's
right.
The part that is harder to get through when you move away from quantum-like theories. So if we have a theory of non-completely positive maps, it may be hard to prove that purification is satisfied. So you may get a similar result, but you probably would need a different axiom.
So I don't remember all the axioms, but I suspect it'll still go through because you still have an isomorphism between the states and the maps. It's just not Troy isomorphism, it's the Jamolkowski isomorphism. So I wonder, it seems
some
likely
things,
that all of it will still hold.
Sure. I mean, the proof techniques that I'm using here may not go through because I was focusing on purification. And I think proving purification is hard in all these cases. I mean, actually think it doesn't hold. The purification
really?
Doesn't hold.
So can you give an example?
A complex mixture of the partial transpose, the maximally entangled state, and the maximally entangled state. Would you call that pure or a mixed state?
Yeah, I'm not very good with examples, at least I would say there are very little examples of quantum theories with purification. No? There is a complex Hilbert spaces, real Hilbert spaces. There is the Gaussian quantum mechanics. One can have Gaussian purifications that are unique up to Gaussian transformation. Stabilizer and the finite fields. I think these are the only examples I know. The only concrete examples I know. Maybe one can do something with Jordan algebras, but I haven't seen this yet. I mean, Alex Wills and Howard Barnum were working on like studying a kind of an extension of quantum theory, including Jordan algebraic systems. So they had to face the problem of defining a tensor product and defining what are the pure states of tensor products in this case. So they did it at least in some cases, but I wouldn't be sure that one can prove that this theory satisfies purification. The construction is pretty sophisticated, so it's kind of hard to check things, at least for me. But for the moment, the examples I know are the ones I just said. Yep.
Can you capture something like the GHZ paradox?
Good point. I don't know, maybe. The GHZ paradox, we need to, all these things go in the direction of measurements. So this is the part that I haven't done yet. I guess one can do, and the reason why I say I guess so is that to some extent, in a different language, it has been done by Bob Cook's group. So they have this treatment of Mermin non-locality based on graphical properties. So they impose these strong complementarity relations. So they impose some new axioms there. And from these axioms, they construct a kind of GHZ properties without going to probabilities. So this makes me confident that one can do something similar here with these notions that I have been showing until now, but I haven't done it yet. So I cannot give to you a result on this. So I am positive, but I don't know yet. Thank you very much. Thanks.